Okay, good morning. Good morning, everyone. So, we left off the daf yesterday. We got to the two dots of Mem Amud Aleph, but we also ran, it was complicated, we ran close to Mincha, and I know for some people who prepared, they maybe prepared to the bottom, of, who weren't here, went to the bottom of Lamed Tes. So what we'll do is, we'll start from the two dots where we left off yesterday. If anyone's interested after this year, to go back and just start from the bottom of Lamed Tes and Beis and finish up till where we started today, I'd be more than happy to do that. So, but for those who heard it, you're welcome to leave, and no one should feel obliged to stay if you'd like. It's an offer. Okay, so at the two dots on Mem Amud Aleph, Tana Rabbanan, Apotropsim Mishalmin Min Ha'Aliyah Ve'Ein Mishalmin Kofer. So Apotropsim, Rashi says Mishalmin Min Ha'Aliyah means that they pay damages. That when they're a guardian, they pay damages. Why it says Mishalmin Min Ha'Aliyah? Maybe it's because it's reinforcing the point, according to the view, that the apotropsim only end up paying when it is a muad, but not when it's a tam. But whatever the reason is, it says apotropsim do pay nezek. So if they're a guardian for a cher shot of a katan, and the animal of the cher shot of a katan causes damages, that an apotropis does pay. The aim mishaman kofer. But an apotropis, a guardian, would not pay kofer. And kofer is that we know that if a shor kills a man, so the shor is put to death, and also the owner has to pay a kofer. So they're saying that even though normally an owner pays a kofer, if the owner in this case is the apotropis acting on behalf of a cher shot of a katan, then in that case the apotropis would not pay it. So the Gemara says, "Man tana kufra kapara v'yasmi lav b'nei kapara nino." So the Gemara assumes that the rationale for an apotropis or a guardian not paying is because two facts here. Kufra kapara is kofer. So kofer is a debate as to whether kofer is a monetary obligation. It's simply a payment, a fine that gets paid, or a fine that gets paid, or is it designed literally to be kapara? So in other words, you're saying, it seems from the fact that it says an apotropis pays nezek but does not pay kofer, is it must be because this mandamra holds that kofer is designed to be a kapara, and the yisomim are not b'nei kapara, meaning a cher shot v'katan, since they're not accountable for their actions or the actions of their animals. So therefore, they should not have to pay kofer because they're not in need of kapara because they didn't do anything wrong. We consider them not having the mental capacity to be responsible for the actions of their animals. So the Gemara says, okay, so I'll tell you who has that opinion that kofer kapara. I'm Rav Chista, Rav Yishmol, Benosho, Rav Yochanan ben Brokahi. It seems to be the opinion of Rav Yishmol, the son of Rav Yochanan ben Broka. Desanya, how do we see that? Because we learned in a brisa of Anasam Pidyon Nafsho. So the pasuk tells us in kofer yushas alav, that if they assess a kofer against him, v'nasam pidyon nafsho, he gives a redemption for his soul, kechol asher yushas alav, like all that they assess against him. So it says v'nasam pidyon nafsho, he gives the pidyon of his soul, d'mei nizik. That's the opinion of the Tanna Kamma, which is that you would pay the value of the person who got killed. Rabbi Shmuel, b'nosha Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, amar d'mei mazik. You pay the value of the mazik. So the Gemara assumes, my love, isn't it? B'hakam l'vagid. The Rabbanan savri kofra mamonohu. The Rabbanan hold that kofar is a financial payment. So if something is a financial payment, it means the shor killed the individual, so you have to pay for the individual. So it makes sense that you would assess the kofar by the value of the individual, because it's a financial payment for having killed him. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, savar, but Rabbi Shmuel ben the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka holds kofra kapara, that kofar is an atonement. It's a kapara payment. And therefore, who is paying for atonement for their soul is the mazik, the person who did the damage, meaning the person whose animal did the damage. And therefore, it makes sense that you should assess the kofar by the value of the mazik, because the idea would be that because his animal killed a person, so in some sense he's liable maybe in his own life, and therefore he pays his own value to redeem himself and to get this atonement. So it seems from the fact that the Tanna Kamma says the main mazik, the main nizik, that they hold that it's a financial payment, and Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka would hold that it's an atonement payment, and that's why you assess it by the value of the damager or the owner of the damaging shor. So Amar Papa, Papa says, lo. That's not necessarily what the Tanakama and Rabbi Shmuel ben Osha, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka are arguing about. It could be that the Kuli Alma Kufra Kaparahu, maybe everyone holds that Kofar is in fact a Kapara. V'hacha b'hacha mifugi. And here, then what are they arguing about? Why one says Dmei Mazik and one says Dmei Nizik? Rabbanan Savri, Rabbanan hold B'de Nizik Shaimina, that we do it by, we evaluate it based on the value of the person who was killed. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osha, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Savra B'de Mazik Shaiminan, that we do it by the Mazik. So far it's just repeated the opinions that my time at the Rabbanan. So the Gemara asks, okay, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osha, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka makes sense, because if we're saying that everyone holds Kufra Kapara, so therefore you should value it by the value of the person who owns the damaging shor, because he has to redeem itself. But why would the Rabbanan say that you have to do it by the value of the nizik? If it's a kapara for the mazik, it should be the value of the mazik, not the value of the nizik. So the Gemara says, my time of the Rabbanan, because nemra shisa lamata, v'nemra shisa lamala. So it says, shisa lamata, what's lamata? Means the latter of the two psukim we're going to say is actually our pasuk, which says, Im kofar yushas alav, if they assess against him kofar v'nasim pinyanasho, kechol asher yushas alav, like all that they assessed against him. So you see this word shisa, the idea of assessment. V'nemer shisa lamayla, and it says shisa lamayla, where is lamayla? Rashi says, le'inyan d'mei vladas kasher yashas alav ba'al ha'isha. What's that talking about? So a little bit before our pasuk, a few psukim before, talks about the sugya of if a man hits a pregnant woman, and the woman aborts on the basis of that blow. So it says that he has to pay kechol asher yushas alav bala isha, kasher yashas alav bala isha, like the husband of the woman assesses against him. So you see this word, yushas, or assessment, or shisa. So the Gemara says the reason for the Rabbanan is because you have exer shava, because it says shisa there and it says shisa here. Ma lahalon, just like over there, but the nizik, because when the man hits the woman and causes the woman to abort, so you pay the value of the fetus, whatever that is, afkam but the nizik. So too here, because we have the gzer shava, that the halacha is the nizik. And that's the explanation for why the Rabbanan, even if they hold that kofar as a kapara, might still say, or would still say, that you do it by the value of the nizik. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osha, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, what does he hold? That why, on earth, what about this Kazer Shava? He holds Sabar, V'nasam Pidyon Nafsho Ksiv. It says, he gives the Pidyon, the redemption of his soul, means him, the Mazik. So at the end of the day, he doesn't agree with the way the Chachamim learn. So, Rabbanan, what do the Rabbanan do with the fact that the Pasuk says, V'nasam Pidyon Nafsho, he gives the redemption of his soul, which seems to imply the Mazik. So the Rabbanan don't actually disagree. They don't say that it means the nizik. They say, you're right, it does mean the mazik, but in Pidyon Nafsho, because if it is written, the redemption of his soul, mihu ki shayminon, but the nizik shayminon. Nonetheless, that when they value it by the nizik. So it's saying, you're right, we do establish that we have to give a pidyon for the mazik, and the mazik has to give it to redeem his own soul, that's correct, but who said that just because he has to give it to redeem his own soul, it's by his value. Based on the Gzer Shava, we would learn that it's a different value. In other words, there's one mechanism, or there's one reason to say that he has to pay kofar, which is kapara, and atonement for himself, but the method of valuation is by the nizik, not by the mazik, and that they learn, the Rabbanan learn from the Gzer Shava. Okay, so now we have not demonstrated necessarily, in other words, we've not found the Tana who would hold Kufra Kapara v'yasmila b'nei Kapara nino. Okay. Fine. So new thing. The Gemara says, Mishabeach le'ravel l'rav Nachman v'drav Achon bar Yaakov da'adam gadohu. You see things like this a few different times in Shas, you have it in Brachas, you have it in Nida, but it says that Rava was telling Rav Nachman what a great person Rav Achon bar Yaakov was. So he said, l'kashiyavu liyadcha heviyu liyadi. When next time he comes to see you, then bring him to me. Now, in some of those other stories, it didn't go well. This one actually goes well. Ki asa l'gabe, when he came to him, so he showed up. So Amar Leih, Rav Nachman said to him, boy mine milsa, ask me something. Ask me a question. So he said this to Rav Achon bar Yaakov, who they said was an Adam Gadol. So boy mine, he asked him as follows. Shor shel shnei shutvim, ketzad mishamim kofer. Let's say you have a shor that belongs to two partners, and it kills a person. So the question is, how do you pay? how do you pay kofar? And he continues that there's a problem. Mishalim high kofar v'high kofar. If you're going to tell me that each of the partners makes a complete payment of kofar, that doesn't make sense, because kofar echad am rachmanav loshnei kofrim. In other words, the Torah seems to imply that you bring. There's one kofar that's paid, so you can't pay two kofars. So then you'll say hai chatzi kofar v'hai chatzi kofar. He said maybe you'll tell me that they should each pay half of the kofar, whatever the kofar is. Maybe they each pay half of their own value, or they each pay half of the value of the nizik. So he says, but that doesn't make sense either, because kofar shalom am rachmanav lo chatzi kofar. That the pasuk says you pay kofar, which means a complete kofar, and you don't. There's no such thing as a half kofar. So what he's saying is that there's two options here, and neither is good, because the Torah clearly doesn't contemplate two kofar payments, and the Torah also doesn't contemplate a half kofar payment. But yet this guy has to pay kofar. So this was the question that Rav Acha bar Yaakov asked Rav Nachman. Adi Yosef v'kama ayin bo. Rav Nachman was sitting there and thinking about the question he asked him. So then he said, Amar Leih, he said, I'll ask you another question. And he threw in the following question. Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah, Chayve Erechin, Mimashkin and Osan, that we learned in the Mishnah that the obligations of Erechin, we take a mashkin on it, Chayve Chatos, Hashem is Eim Mimashkin and Osan, that if someone is Chayve Chatos or Hashem, we do not take a deposit. What is this saying? This saying as follows. So Erechin, as we've learned many times, Erechin are where someone says, Erki Alai, Erki Cholai, and someone says, my value I owe to the Beis HaMikdash, or his value, or someone else's value, whatever it is. So, and the Torah has set amounts that you pay. If you say Erki Alai, depends how old you are, what gender you are, you pay a certain amount, right? So the Mishnah tells us that if someone says, Erki Alai, that Bezdin would go down and take his watch away from him, and said, we'll give you back your watch when you bring the Erech payment. But if someone is chayev achatas or nasham, then in that case, we would not go take something away from them to make sure that they're going to bring it. So, why is that? So the reason that is because an erech payment is just a monetary obligation. It's not a kapara. So therefore, a person might be a little lax about doing it. Versus a chatas or nasham, the person's walking around with the burden of the fact that they sinned. And a chatas or an asham is an opportunity to get atonement. So if people want the atonement, they're going to remember and they're going to bring the carbon they need to bring. So there's no need to go in and take a mashkon. On the other hand, someone who just said, okay, I'm going to pay the Beis HaMikdash 30 shkalim or whatever it is, so he might not be so quick to do it. He might delay. So therefore, they go in and they take a mashkon against it. So Rav Acha bar Yaakov was coming and asking the following question. Chayve kofrin mai. What about if someone is mechuyev in a kofar payment? Do we go in? And in this case, it might be, the way the Rishonim understand that, it might be that the other, it's not just Bezin, it could be the person, the heirs of the person who is killed. Can they go and take something from the person saying, I want to make sure that you pay the kofar? So what's the stadim to this question? He says, kivan de kaparahu kechatas u'asham dami, that since it is kofar payment, as we know, is an atonement for the soul of the owner of the damaging shor, so therefore it's like a chatas and asham, and machmer chomer yilave v'loy boy mashkune, and therefore it's strict on him, meaning he wants kapara for his shor having killed, and therefore there's no need to go in and take his watch away, because he's going to make the payment of kofar, because he wants the kapara that comes with kofar. Odilmo, or maybe we would say kiven de lechavre hu debay meisri lema moinohu v'loy legvayohu, that they're going to say, but maybe that what's going on here is that in the case of chatas or asham, who do they bring the chatas and asham to? They bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. So that in their mind, that's a real kapara. In this case, who are they giving it to? They're giving it to the heirs of the person who was killed. Okay, that doesn't feel so much like kapara. It feels like just a monetary obligation. So maybe we would go in and take his watch away because we're afraid otherwise he's not going to pay. It's not chomer to him, uboy mashkune, and therefore we need to take a mashkon, we need to take an item from him. Inami, or the Gemara continues, I'll tell you another reason why even though kofar is an atonement payment, it's not like chatas and asham, who were not worried that the guy's not going to pay, and instead we should worry that we have to take something from him. Why? So he says, the reason I might think that you should take a mashkun, even though it's a kapara, is because at the end of the day, in this case, the owner didn't do avera himself. His shor killed someone. So he's going to feel like, okay, that's a monetary obligation. So even though they tell me I have to pay kapara, it doesn't feel to him the same way of a kapara as he would for a chatas or asham, where he did something wrong. Here his shor did something wrong, and therefore maybe we should be concerned that even though at the end of the day we know that kofar is a kapara, it's an atonement, he may not feel that acutely enough that he's going to rush to bring it, and therefore maybe we should demand a mashkun from him. So Rav Acha bar Yaakov asked Rav Nachman two questions. One is, when you have a shor shel shutfim, a shor that belongs to partners, and a gors, how do they pay kofar? Do they pay half? Do they pay each? Do each of them pay? How does it work? And then while he was thinking about that question, he asked him, kofra, when you have the kofar, is that something that you go in and take a mashkan or you don't take a mashkan? So Rav Nachman says, Amr le shavkan, leave me alone, istagar bekamaisa. Rashi says, istagar bekamaisa, that, husgarti, you closed me up, v'ne'alamti, you rendered me mute, barishona, with your first question. He's saying, I was stuck on your first question. Don't ask me the second question. Leave me alone. So evidently, he was impressed with Rav Acha bar Yaakov that he had good questions. He didn't know the answers. Okay. The Gemara continues, turn around, bun in the two dots on the third medium line. Shalu b'cheskas tam, v'nimtza muad, ba'ale m'shalom chatzi nezek, v'shalom m'shalom chatzi nezek. So it's saying as follows. Let's say, I walk up to someone and I borrow his shor. And I assume that the shor is a shor tam who's never gored before, or at least hasn't been proved to be a muad. V'nimtza muad, it turns out that the owner has never told me that it was a muad, so therefore I didn't watch the animal so carefully, because most animals don't gore. But I didn't watch it so carefully, but it turned out it really was a muad, so I didn't watch it carefully. It went in and gored someone, or gored an animal. So balim mishalmin chasi nezek. So the owners pay chatzi nezek and the shoal pays chatzi nezek. Why? Because the shoal thought it was a shor tam. So, and he didn't watch it carefully. So now, if it would have gone in damage, he would have owned chatzi nezek. So he should pay chatzi nezek. The owner has to pay the other part of chatzi nezek, because at the end of the day, 100% needs to be paid, because l'mai says it's a shor muad. But the shomer says, you didn't tell me that it was a shor muad. So therefore, the owners who neglected to tell him, be careful, watch the shor very carefully because it's a muad, because they neglected to tell him, they have to pay half of the damages. And it continues, and it says, huad bevei shoa, a similar case. What happens if I lend my shor to someone, and while it was in his house, he borrowed it from me, it gored three times, and it became a muad, right? And now he comes to return it to me. V'echziru l'bailim, and they return it to the bailim, and then it goes and so he returns it to me, and then it goes and gores. So now it's become a shor muad. So the question is, how much should I have to pay? In other words, it's a muad, so we're going to have to pay 100%, but maybe I should make the shoal pay something because he turned it into a muad. The Brisa says, no, bailim mishalim chatzi nezek, I pay chatzi nezek. The shoal doesn't pay anything. So again, this is the case. The shoal borrowed it from me. He made it into a muad. The Brisa says, no, he doesn't pay anything. And I, the owner who got it back, it's not fair that I should have to pay nezek shalem, because I didn't have the chance to watch it. It happened under the shoal's watch. So this is a case of, we learned this yesterday, mishanah rishus, where when something changes rishus, it goes back to being a tam. So while it was in the hands of the shoal, the borrower, he made it into a shor muad. So if it would gore one more time under his watch, he would have to pay nezek shalem. But when he gives it back to me, then I get to start again, and I only have to pay chatzi nezek. So that's the second halach of the brisa. The first one is that if I didn't know when I borrowed it that it was a muad, I only pay chatzi nezek, and the owners have to pay chatzi. But the opposite case where it happened within the rishus of the shoal that it became a muad, when he returns it to me, I only have to pay chatzi nezek. I don't have to pay with halacha of muad, because we say mishana rishus. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar mar. So he's repeating this halacha, shalu b'cheskas tam, v'nimsa muad, b'alam mishanam chatzi nezek, v'shol chatzi nezek. So this case where I borrowed it thinking it was a tam, and it turned out to be a muad, then I pay half, and the owner pays half. The Gemara says, now there's going to be a long series of arguments why the halacha should be different. via my first wide line. Why should he be chayev? Why should the shul be chayev at all? Lemale, let him say to the owner, Tura she'ili, arye lo she'ili. I borrowed a shor from you. I didn't borrow a lion. I didn't want an animal that I need to be careful for what he's going to do. So at the end of the day, since I thought he was a tom, I didn't lock him up. You should pay the whole thing because it's your fault that you gave me a muad shor. I didn't want a muad shor. Amar Rav. Rav says, Hachu b'mayaskinon shehiker bo shehu nagchan. So he says, no, because even if he didn't know it was a muad, he saw that it was like a violent kind of shor. You know, he's constantly stomping his foot and snarling or whatever he was doing. So you should have thought, and we actually encountered this yesterday, because we were talking about, the Gemara was talking about the fact, in other words, if you cannot make the shor a muad when it belongs to the ketanim until you appoint an apotropis, and then it has to gore three times under the apotropis, when do you ever appoint an apotropis? So he says, because when you see that the shor has a violent nature, you appoint an apotropis, at that point you start the process of becoming a muad. So there's this idea of a stage where you could tell an animal is a violent nature, so therefore, because he saw the violent nature, he should have been careful, and that's why he can't tell the owners, I didn't want a lion, because owners will say, you saw it was a pretty violent shor. You might not have known it was a muad, but you still saw it was violent. So the Gemara says, V'neimale tam she'ili muad lo she'ili, you should say, fine, at the end of the day, though, I recognized that it was violent, but I didn't recognize that it was a muad. A muad is obviously more established to be a gorer than just because the animal stomps its foot and snarls all day. That just indicates something, but it's not a fact. Here, you gave me an animal that factually was a muad. So he says, Mishon Darvinle, he says back to him, Sof, Itam Hava, Pal Nizka, Bayishlumi, Hashanami, Zil Shlim, Pal Nizka. So he says, well, look, at the end of the day, fine, you're right. I didn't tell you it was a muad. I told you, you thought it was a tom. But at the end of the day, let's say it had gored under your watch. You'd have had to pay half. So now you should also pay half. So he says...
Does the Gemara discuss that? A shawl that takes a tom and then it gores?
Oh, yeah. He would be obligated because a shawl is obligated in... any shomer, really, is obligated to watch the animal. And if he's not giving it a valid watching, he would be chayv, whatever the owner would be chayv, which in this case would be chatzi nezek. So the Gemara says...
If the shawl knew it was a muad, he'd have to pay...
He'd have to pay 100%. Yeah, sure. So the Gemara says, V'neimalei, bottom line, itam have mishtalimi gufo. So he said, the Gemara says as follows. He's going to say, look, I still shouldn't pay you anything. Even because what would have happened, let's say I borrowed it when it was a tom, and it gored. So remember, when a tom damages, where does the money come from? The other guy can go take the animal. So he says he would have taken the animal, and then I would have paid nothing, and you would have had to pay it. So in other words, I still should pay you nothing, he says. So he says, Mishum da amrle, sof, at, lav, tura, bayishlumi, I'm sorry, sof, at lav tura bay shlumin li didi. So he said to him, so he says, what's your point? And this was the question Ari was just asking, and he's saying, you're right. So they would go take the shor, and it would get paid out of the owner's shor. But at the end of the day, the owner would then come back to me and say, you borrowed my shor, you caused me damage because it gored, and now the guy took my shor, so you have to pay me back for what the guy took. So you'd have to pay me anyway. So why is that a good, argument that you shouldn't have to pay the fact that the nizik takes it from the animal itself? You'd still have to pay me back. So what difference does it make? I'll make you pay half here. So the Gemara says, V'neimale, well, not so quick, because maybe it would said, Itam hava, had you given me a short tamor on Amud Beis, Modina umiftarina, I would have been moda that the shor damaged, and I would have been putter, because we know that there's an opinion that chatzi nezek is a kenas. And any kenas, if you're moda in the kenas, it'd have been putter. So what he's saying is, you gave me a muad, so I can't be moda in the kenas and become putter. Had it been a tam, I could have been moda in kenas and become putter, and then I would have had to pay nothing. So therefore, you, owner, should pay 100%, and I, shomer, should pay nothing. Because I could have been moda be kenas. Now the Gemara says, So you'll tell me, okay, that's only according to the one who says it's a kenas. What about according to the view that when you pay chatzi nezek, it's a monetary damage, and so therefore you should say to the owner, the guy's trying to say to the owner, you should pay 100% because, you should pay 100% because they would have anyway taken it out of your animal. So he says, because neimalei itamhu havimarikna leila agma. He says, because look, had it been a tam, what would I have done? had I known it was a muad, what I would have done is I would have taken it into the swamp. Means I would have gone and hidden the animal so no one can take it. But now that it's a muad, I don't have that option. Because a muad doesn't help. Because why? Because what's the whole taina here? The owner was saying to him, even if they would have taken it from the animal, you would have owed me back the money. And he's saying, no, I wouldn't have. Because once I found out it was a muad, I did not have the option to go hide the thing. If I would have had the option, if I would have known it was a tam, I'd have gone and hidden it. Why is that better? Because then the nizik is only allowed to take me gufo. He's only allowed to take from the body of the shor, but he can't find the shor. So at the end of the day, I wouldn't have had to pay. But now that it's a muad, it doesn't help if I go hide it. Why not? Because a muad is mashalim in aliyah. A muad pays from any assets. So you don't need specifically that asset. So it doesn't help if I go hide this one asset in the swamp. At the end of the day, he'll collect from the owner's other assets. And then the owner will come after me and say, you caused this damage.
What's the purpose of hiding?
The purpose of hiding is because if it's a tam, the only place the nizik can collect from is the body of the animal. If the animal's not there, he can't collect. So therefore, he's saying, I wouldn't have had to pay. Now, Tosos asks, what kind of business is this? Eventually, you're going to do it. You're going to take the animal out, and then they'll take from the animal. So Tosos ends up with an interesting thing, which Tosos says as follows, that what would have happened, what he's saying to the owner is, look, at the end of the day, I could have done this, and the guy who was damaged would know that I could have done this, so he would have negotiated with me, and he's a real Jew, and I'd have gotten less, a better deal from the nizik. And because I didn't realize, because I only found out later it was a muad, I couldn't do that. The Yamshel Shlomo talks about this. There's a whole question that he brings that some people, based on this Tosos, think that it's okay when you're negotiating with someone, you could say whatever you want, as long as all you're trying to do is get a better deal. And the Yamshel Shlomo protests this very heavily. Although it's interesting, he says that if you have a counterclaim against someone else for the value, or if you think he's claiming something beyond what he's owed, then you technically have the right to engage in this. You could say things back and forth just to get to the better outcome. But he says a Yirei Shemayim wouldn't do it. So it's an interesting question. So it's an interesting thing, the Yamshel Shlomo. Okay, so in any event, so he says, had I known, it turns out you gave me a muad, so taking it to the agam is not an option, so you caused me damage. So he says, Elahachav Ma'askinon, what are we talking about? Kigon the Akdim Beidin of a Tafse. So you're right, you could normally tie that you could take it to the agam, but he says, in this case, Bezdin went ahead and grabbed the animal, and therefore you cannot say, that you would have hidden it, because right away Bezin came and took the animal. And you can't say you would have been Moda B'Knas, because Moda B'Knas only works if you're Moda before there are Edim who come and say you did it. Now, if Bezin came and took it away from you, it's because Edim came to Bezin and said that this Shar Gurd, a Shar Mu'ad, so at that point, even if it was a short time, at that point, if they've come to collect it, you're not able to be Modeh B'Kenas anymore. So he's saying, you're right, those would be good tainas, Modeh B'Kenas, or the fact that you could have hidden it, but that doesn't work in a case where Bezdin has already showed up to confiscate the animal. So the Gemara asks, all right, well, now we're going to switch directions altogether. Ihachi, if we're talking about a case where Bezdin came and grabbed it, so we were dealing with that till now, where the Shoel was trying to say to the owner, I shouldn't have to pay you Chatzin Ezek, you should pay 100%. Now we're going the other direction and saying, maybe the owner can say to the Shoel, why should I have to pay Chatzin Ezek? Name a lay, let him say to him, so he says, you let the animal be grabbed by the party that I can't argue with, meaning Bezdin. So he's saying, had it not been claimed, we could have had this stuff. You could have argued that it was a kenas. You could have argued whatever. So the owner is saying, at this point, you've messed me up because you let Bezdin take the shor. So therefore, you, Shoel, should have to pay 100%. So he says, Mishum der Amalei, Iyahadrite Nehilech, Lav Minoch Avishaklilei. So he says, what kind of answer is that? I could tell back to the owner, look, Bezdin took it from me because I had it. Had I given it back to you, they'd have taken it from you. So what difference does it make? You wouldn't have been able to do any of these things. Bezdin would have taken it from you. So the Gemara says, Let him say, So he says to the owner, well, hold on. And you're telling me the owner that had Bezdin not taking it from you, and you'd have given it back to me, Bezdin would have come taking it from me, so I didn't cause you any damage. He says, maybe right when you'd given it back to me, before Bezdin would come to me, I'd have gone and taken it into the swamp and hidden it. And then they wouldn't have been able to collect it from me. So he says, Damarlay, Sof Sof, Lav Me Aliyah, having Sof Sof, Lav Me Aliyah, having Mishtami. Second, Andrew. It's a question. He says, hold on, Mr. Owner. Don't forget here what we're talking about. This was a sharmuad, and you didn't tell me it was a sharmuad. But since it's a sharmuad, what would they have done? They'd have collected from your other assets. Because when is it relevant to go hide it in the swamp? It's relevant when it's a short term, because then they can only collect from Migufe. But here, had I given it back to you and you'd have gone and hid it in the swamp, so what did you accomplish for yourself? Because they would still come and take your other assets, right? So the Gemara says, okay, Hanicha, that works, Hecha de Islay Nichse. So that works if he has other assets. But Hecha de Lesley Nichse, Michael Amemer, what are you going to say? What if the guy, this is his only asset? So he's going to say to the guy, why should I pay anything? You let Bezdin take it. The guy says, I would have given it back to you and Bezdin would have taken it from you. He says, no, I would have put it in the Agam. So he says back to him, well, what does putting it in the Agam help? They would take your other assets. And he's saying back, I have no other assets. So he should still say that the Shoal should have to pay the whole thing. So he says, Mishum da Amar like Yehecha de Mishtabadna Lididach, Hachinami Mishtabadna Lahech. So he says, no, I could still tell you why you cannot taina on me for letting Bezdin grab it from you, and this is the whole thing. He was saying, you would have given it back to me, I'd have hidden it, and it's my only asset. Bezdin says he cannot taina that on him. Why? Because of Shibuda de Reb Nassan. So we've encountered this many, many times, but we'll speak it out again. Shibuda de Reb Nassan is the idea. If I owe Maishi $200, and Maishi owes Greg $200, that Greg can come directly to me and collect that $200. He doesn't have to be where Maishi has to collect from me, and then Greg has to collect from Maishi. He could come straight to me. That's the Shibuda de Reb Nassan. So it's saying, in this case, so what's going on is that because I technically, I the Shoel, have an obligation to the owner, but the owner has an obligation to the Nizik, and Bezdin is representing the interest of the Nizik, so I'm entitled to give the money directly to Bezdin. So therefore, the whole taina here was that the guy was saying, why did you let Bezdin grab it? I could have hidden it and I didn't have any other assets and whatever. He's saying, it doesn't matter. You cannot hold me accountable for having let Bezdin take the animal. Why? Because since I owe you and you owe the Nizik and Bezdin is representing the Nizik, I'm entitled and perhaps obligated to pay Bezdin directly. So you cannot taina on me, you cannot claim on me the fact that I let Bezdin take the shor. Where do we see this Shibuda de Reb Nassan? The Sanya, because we learned in a Braiser, Reb Nassan Amen, Reb Nassan says, Minayin lenosha b'chavero mona, b'chavero b'chavero, minayin shemotziyo mizeven osan lozeh. How do I know, where do I know from, that if someone owes his friend 100, and his friend owes his friend 100, how do I know that I can take it from, that I can take it from me, and give it straight to Greg, Talmud Lomar, V'nasan la'asher asham lo. That you give it, this is a pasuk that's written by, it's talking about someone, if someone steals something from someone, and then he swears that he didn't steal it, and then he admits, you know what, I really did steal it. So in that case, he pays the Karen and a Chomesh, and it says, V'nasan la'asher asham lo. You give it to the one to whom he sinned against. Who is that? The guy who he stole from. But the Reb Nassan picks up on the fact that that's a strange lashon. Why would you say to the one to whom you sinned against, you pay? So he understands that there to be a secondary meaning in that word asham. And aside from an asham, which is guilt, or like an asham offering is a guilt offering, there's asham can also mean the principle, the keren. So he's saying, Menasan la'asher asham lo, you give it to the one to the principle is his. So if I owe Maishi $200, but Maishi in turn owes it to Greg, so that's really Greg's $200. So the Nasan Lasher Asham Lo, I can give it or have to give it to the one to whom the principal really belongs. Who is that? That would be Greg. So that's Rav Nasan's source for the concept of what we call Shibudah de Rav Nasan, the lien of Rav Nasan. It's the idea that you can give from A to C without going through B. Okay, so we've now finished that long back and forth between the owner and the shoel about who should have to pay what and when. Okay, the Gemara says, Huad beves shoel v'chziro lebailim. So this was the second case in the brisa we learned, where I borrow the shar. And while it's there, it gores three times and becomes a muad. And then I return it to the owner, Bailam Mishalam Chatzi Nezek. So then the owner gets a reset. V'shoel pater miklum. And the shoel is pater from anything because we say Mishanim Rishus. So the Gemara says, well, hold on. Because if you remember, this Brisa had two halachas. This was the Brisa over here where we said that, first of all, what happens if I borrow it thinking it's a tam and it turns out to be a muad? And the second case was, what if it becomes a muad in the hands of the shoel and then he gives it back to the owner? So the Gemara says, you have a stira here because... sorry, I just lost my place here. So this is telling you, why is it that when the shoel gives it back to the owner, it gets reset and he gets to pay chatzi nezek? Must be because reshus mishana, that when you switch reshus, it's a reset counter on whether he gets to be a muad or a tam. But the problem is, resha reshus ain't a mishana. But the resha says reshus does not change. Why? Because when I borrow the shar from the owner and the owner doesn't tell me it's a muad, right? And I think it's a tam. So we end up saying that someone pays 100%. So the shoel pays 50%, the owner pays 50%. But if you tell me that when there's a change in reshus, the clock gets reset. So when the owner lends me the shar, even though it's a muad, it should become a tam. So from the fact that the first case of the Brisa doesn't talk about that and instead talks about where the 100% gets paid from, it's clear that they hold that changing Rishus does not reset the clock on Tam or Muad. So I'm Rav Yochanan, and Rav Yochanan says, Tabra, it's broken, and so therefore you're right, Misha Shanazu, Lo Shanazu, that the first statement of the Brisa and the second statement of the Brisa actually conflict, and therefore it represents the views of two different people. Rabba says, no. Since in the Reisha we see that when the owner gives it to the shoel, it doesn't reset the counter. And the fact that it's a muad causes someone damage. So Seifa Nami Rishus in Mishana. So then the Seifa also has to be Rishus. Rishus is not Mishana. So therefore, the reason the owner pays only Chatzi Nezek cannot be because Rishus Mishana, because Rishus is not Mishana according to this view. V'seifa hainu taima, so then why is that the reason? Mishum da amar le lav kol kaminach d'miadis le l'toiroi. Because it's not that Rishus resets the counter. The reason the owner gets to pay Chatzi Nezek is because he tells the shoel, in other words, the shoel barred it and made it into muad. He says, it cannot be made into the muad in the Rishus of the shoel. Why? Because muad is the idea that you warn the owner, and the owner has to take care of it, right? So he said, had I been the one holding it, I wouldn't have let it become a muad. So you can't hold me accountable. And again, this gets into the whole question, is a muad of the bailam or a muad of the animal? But in other words, he would say, it's not possible for it to become a muad in the hands of the shoel as relates to me, maybe as relates to the shoel, but as relates to me, it doesn't work like that. Because I should have had the chance to watch it. So that's why he gets to pay Chatzi Nezek. So it's not that because when he gets it back, there's a reset. It's rather because when he gets it back, he says, it cannot be that it became a muad as relates to me, while in someone else's reshus, who is not going to watch it the way I'm going to watch it. So that's Rabba's explanation of why the Reish and Sefer are not a stira, because they both hold that reshus is Eina Mishana, that when you give it back, it doesn't reset the counter clock. Rav Papa says, me the Sefer reshus, Rishus Mishana, since the Seifa we see that there's resets the count, because we say that when the shoel who made it a muad gives it back to the owner only pays Chatzi Nezek. So Reisha Nami Rishus Mishana. So Reisha, the one who said the first statement of the Tana, of the Braisa also agrees that Rishus is Mishana. So if so, when the owner who already made this animal into muad lends it to me and I thought it was a tam, why don't we say that Rishus is Mishana? Therefore, no one should pay 100%. We were figuring out who pays 50-50, why not say no one pays 100% because you reset the counter? And this Tana holds you reset the counter. So why, in this case, is it paying 100? So he says, because that's not really a full change in Rishus. In other words, when the owner, if it became Muad under the owner's auspices, and then the owner lent it to someone, it's still, everyone still says, that's so-and-so with the owner's animal. So because it's still seen as the owner's animal, it still maintains its status as a muad. So therefore, Rishus is not Mashana. But when you have a shoel who causes muad, that and then he transfers it to the owner, that's not a seamless transfer. That's a real transfer. And therefore, Rishus is Mashana, and at that point, it resets the clock, and that's why he gets to pay Chatzi Nezek and not Nezek Shalim. So according to the Rabbah, they both agree that Rishus is not Mashana, and according to Rav Papa, they both agree that Rishus is Mashana, and in each case they explain the case that seems not to work. Okay. Shor Itzadan Enochai Misa, that we talked about this yesterday, that if you have a shor that was a fighting shor, it was trained to fight, it's not Chayiv Misa. Because it says Ki Yigach, that if a shor gores, Velosha Yagi Chuhu, not that other people cause it to gore. Okay, so the Gemara says, I'll ask you a question. Mahu legabim mizbeach. So there's a halacha that if something is chayav misa, you cannot bring it as a carbon on the mizbeach. So the question is, in this case, since he's not chayav misa, because it wasn't his fault, can you take this animal and bring it on the mizbeach? Rav Amar Kasher. Rav says, yes, you can bring it as a carbon. Ushmuel Amar Pasol. Shmuel says it's Pasol. Rav Amar Kasher. Rav says it's Kasher. Why? Because Anas who? He is not a, he's an Anas that he killed a man because they trained him to go in the stadium and kill men. So you can't hold him accountable. So therefore, because he's not culpable, there's no reason you can't bring him as a carbon. Ushmuel Amar Shmuel says Pasol. He's Pasol. Hare Nevid Ba'Avero. It could be that he's not culpable for his killing, but at the end of the day, we're talking about an animal that killed someone, and therefore it should not be brought on the Mizbeach. So the Gemara asks the Kasha on Shmuel. And so long, we're going to quote something, and then we'll get to the Kasha. Meisve, they ask him as follows. The Pasuk says, Min HaBehema. So the Pasuk is written, it says, In Vayikar, Daber al B'nei Yisrael v'marta aleihem. Speak to B'nei Yisrael and say to them as follows. Adam ki yakrav mikem karban l'Hashem. When a man brings a carbon to Hashem, Min HaBehema, it comes from the animals. What types of animals? Minabakar, from the cattle, uminatzon, from the flocks, takrivo is karbanchem. So you have minabehema, minabakar, uminatzon. So he says as follows, minabehema comes to tell you that when, and Rashi says, minabehema, that, mimixas behema velokula, and he says, minabehema from the behemas tells you that certain behemas come, and certain behemoths can come. So what is min ha-behemoths coming to exclude? Lahoti es ha-roveya ves ha-nirva, that is coming to exclude an animal that engaged in bestiality, either where the animal was the actor, or the animal was sodomized by a person. So that such an animal cannot be brought as a karban. Min ha-bakar, the second phrase in the pasuk tells you, lahoti es ha-navad, to say that you cannot bring a carbon that someone chose to worship as an idol. Minatzon, when the pasuk says minatzon, it comes to tell you lahosiyat amuksa, to say that if someone who was an idol worshiper set aside an animal, saying I'm going to bring this animal as an animal sacrifice to my god, that cannot be brought as a carbon. And the last thing, minatzon, the pasuk says minatzon, and the gemara is darshaning because it could have just said minatzon. It could have said adam ki yakrav mikem karban l'Hashem. Minam behema, minabakar, minatzon. Why did it say minatzon? So that vav tells you there's something to be learned. Lahotzi es hanogeach, to say that you cannot bring an animal that gored as a carbon. So now we're going to try and figure out what is this brisa talking about. And it continues. Amar Rav Shimon, the brisa continues saying, Im nemar raveya, lama nemar, I'm not sure if it's a brisa or if it's just an analysis of the brisa. Amar Rav Shimon, Im nemar raveya, lama nemar nogeach. Im nemar nogeach, lama nemar raveya. So it says, why would the brisa need to tell me both an animal that had been engaged in bestiality and an animal that gores? Rashi says, why would I know one from the other? because Hareshnean Shavim Ba'Avera Le'inyan Skila. They both were involved in Avera, and they both got Skila. So I would know, if you told me, I would think that if you told me Nirva, I would know Nogeach, and if you told me Nogeach, I would know Nirva. So why do we need Psukim to tell us both? So the Gemara says, Mipnei sheyesh b'raveya she'en b'nogeach, v'yesh b'nogeach she'en b'raveya. That there's a unique stringency in each case. Raveya asabo ones karatzon, nogeach lo asabo ones karatzon. Why? What's the chumrah in raveya, in an animal that engages in bestiality, that it treats an onus like a ratzon, whereas a nogeach does not treat an onus like a ratzon? How do we see that a raveya treats an onus like a ratzon? Because remember, there's two cases. There's raveya and nirva. In one case, the animal is actively engaging in bestiality, because with a woman, generally, would be the idea that the animal's the actor, so that would be beratzon. What's ones? If you have a person who comes and sodomizes an animal, the animal didn't do anything wrong. And yet, in either case, we say it's excluded. So you see that by Raveya, there's a chumra that it doesn't make a difference whether it's ones or ratzon, whereas by Nogeach, there is a difference whether it's ones or ratzon. We'll see what the difference is. But the Gemara is saying, so therefore, I wouldn't know one from the other. Now, let's say Nogeach, and what's the chumra of Nogeach, that if I would have told me Nogeach, I would not have known Nirveya, that an animal that had been sodomized, because Nogeach, Mishalim Kofer, Nogeach has the chumra that when an animal gores a person and kills him, he pays kofar. Raveya ain't a mishalim, it's a kofar. That a raveya does not pay kofar. Lefika hutzer chlomo raveya v'hutzer chlomo nogeach. That we needed to learn both raveya and nogeach, because they each have a chumra that the other doesn't have. One doesn't, raveya doesn't distinguish between ones and ratzon, and nogeach has the element of kofar, which raveya does not have. So the Gemara says, okay, so remember, we were trying to ask a kasha on Shmuel, who says that you cannot bring it as a carbon. Katani mihas, we learned at least, raveya asabo onis karatzon, that in the case of an animal, we treat it, whether the animal is the sodomizer or the sodomized, it is still not brought as a carbon. Nogeach lo asabo onis karatzon, that nogeach is not, we don't treat it like onis like ratzon. So he's saying that we only hold it accountable beratzon, not baonis. So the Gemara says, "My helchasa for what halacha? Lav la carbon. Isn't it telling you, because everything we're talking about here is about carbon? So when he says that there's no distinction onis ratzon by raveya, but there is a distinction onis ratzon by nogeach, it must be that by a nogeach, if it did it on purpose, you cannot bring it as a carbon, but if you did it by accident, you can bring it as a carbon. And Shmuel says you cannot bring it as a carbon. So this seems to be a kasha on Shmuel. So the Gemara says, no, lo liktala. When it says that it distinguishes between onis and ratzon by a nogeach, it's not talking by carbon, it's talking by whether you kill it, which is what our Mishnah was talking about. Our Mishnah talked about the fact that what don't you do to the shor because it was trained to kill? You don't kill the shor. It's nothing to do with Mizbeach. And the Gemara says, Hachinami Mistabra, this actually makes sense. Di Amrit Lekarbon Nogeach. I'm sorry, Di Amrit Lekarbon, because if you're saying that it's talking about carbon, Nogeach lo also bo onis karatzon, that if you're saying that the Torah did not make an onis like a ratzon in the case of Nogeach as relates to carbon, lav onis didaksiv, lav ratzon didaksiv. The Torah never distinguishes. In other words, when you're saying that the Torah distinguishes between onis and ratzon, if you think it distinguishes in a case of carbon, we never find that the Torah distinguishes in a case of carbon between onis and ratzon. So therefore, el alav l'ketala, it has to be that they only distinguish by putting it to death. All right, we'll stop here. As I said before, if anyone wants, we'll give you a minute for anyone who heard it yesterday or doesn't want it, but otherwise, if anyone wants to stay, we'll just do the first piece of today's Gemara, which was really, we covered yesterday, but we'll do that. Yeah. I'm sorry?
It can be offered or it cannot?
It's a machlokas, Rav and Shmuel. So we were trying to ask a kasha on Shmuel, and the Gemara says not a kasha because we thought it was distinguishing between onis and ratzon based on whether you could bring as a karbon. And then we're saying, no, that's onus and ratzon distinguishes by killing it. So we don't have an answer, so it's a machlokas, Rav and Shmuel.
What did the Gemara mean earlier when it said, one of the arguments was, I'm really loud, called to me, not to me, yeah, I just laid it to right?
He says, you don't have the right. In other words, you as the Shomer, it cannot become a mu'ud under your watch, because you didn't watch it like I would as an onus. What?
That's the owner's trying to get after him.
No, the owner is trying to say why when it comes back to him, the clock should be reset, and he only pays chatzin nezek because he says, you can't make it a, you can't take
that's
my shor and turn it into
a
mu'ah.
The owner pays chatzin nezek, and
the other guy's pater miklum. So the question is, why is, and at the end of the day, it's a mu'ad, so why don't we say that the owner
the
should have to pay mu'ad?
Oh, the question is not why doesn't the shomer have to pay half?
Well, we start with it, but we say he only pays chatzi nezek at the end of the day.
I'm saying
he's saying you cannot make my animal. In other words, because the question is, if you hold, because you hold, then Rishos is not Mishan. So then, why does he only pay Chatzin Nezek? Why doesn't someone pay Nezek Shalom? Because he's saying, he says to the owner, the fact that it became a mu'ud under your watch is maybe relevant to you. It's irrelevant to me. So it's not Mishan and Rishos. It's just the fact that it switches. Okay. We'll get started here. So, and the reason we rushed through yesterday to get to the end is because it's really in the middle of something, but we'll try and go through it one more time, or for those who didn't hear it. So we were dealing with the question that Rav Yaakov said in a case of a shor that belongs to a cheir shot of a katan, that the halacha is, Rav Yaakov says, that he pays chatzin nezek. And we were troubled with this because we said, how does it work that he pays chatzin nezek? If it's a tam, then it's pasha to me that he would pay chatzin nezek because every tam pays chatzin nezek. Rashi asks, why don't you say that really it is a tam? And what was his point in coming to say chatzin nezek was to tell us that in the case of a tam, you put up an apotropis and you actually collect from the cheir shot of a katan. So maybe that's the chiddush in saying that you pay chatzin nezek. So the Rashi says that could not be what the Gemara, that could not be what Rav Yaakov meant, because if that's the point he was trying to say, all he would say is that the cheir shot of a katan, the animal that gores, machayev, he's chayev. Now obviously then it would be telling us that he's chayev chatzin nezek and that he's not, and he wouldn't need to say that it's chatzin nezek. So therefore it can't be talking tam. So it must be talking muad. If it's talking muad. If right now we're just outside, and then we'll get into the Gemara. If it's talking muad, so regardless, if he watched it perfectly, so then we know, like in a case where robbers come and take it out, he's pater, so he would not pay chatzin nezek. And if he didn't watch it at all, when it's a muad, he would pay nezek shalim. So what case is it where Rav Yaakov has to tell us that it is paying chatzin nezek? So Rava comes up with a case and says, "I'll tell you a case where Rav Yaakov is saying that you pay chatzin nezek, and it's a chiddush, and that is in a case where it was a muad, but he watched it reasonably. What's called shmira p'chusa means he closed the door in front of it, which is what you should do, but he didn't watch it in the way that it couldn't cause any damage, because like right? So therefore, that's the case. It's a muad, and he watched it reasonably, but not perfectly. So therefore, why does that translate into chatzin nezek? You would say he did it reasonably. So it's a combination of three factors, three different opinions that combine to find the case where Rav Yaakov says chatzin nezek. What are the three? The first one is that Rav Yehuda's of the opinion. There's a three-way machlokas about what happens if you watch something with shmira p'chusa, an appropriate, reasonable, but not extraordinary level of watching. Rav Meir says, in either case, you're chayev, because you should have watched it more carefully than that. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says, in either case, you're putter, because you exercised reasonable diligence in how you watched your shor. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, which we're going to see in the Gemara, is going to mention on the top of Memamot Aleph, that's Rav Elazar ben Yaakov we're going to see. He says you're putter on either. Rav Yehuda has an interesting opinion based on extra words in the psukim written by muad but not written by tam, which is that if you have a muad with shmira p'chusa, the muad does not pay. The tam, though, because it doesn't have those extra words, would pay. Right? So we run into an anomalous circumstance according to Rav Yehuda, where a muad is putter and a tam pays. So that's machlokas number one. So we're saying we're going like Rav Yehuda, that a muad, if you do shmir p'chusa, is putter. Now, in that machlokas over there, there is a further machlokas in the opinion of Rav Yehuda. There's a machlokas between Rav Adar bar Ava and Rav. Rav says, Rav Yehuda means what he says. You're putter by muad, and therefore if you do shmir p'chusa, you don't need to watch anything. Rav Adar bar Ava says, oh, hold on, that doesn't make any sense. How could you have you be chayav by tam and not chayav by muad? So therefore, he understands what does Rabbi Yehuda mean? He means that tzad tamos b'mekoma omedas, that when we have a nezek shalom payment, it's comprised of two parts, the chatzi nezek of tam and the muad, the half of muad that's added on. So we talked about this yesterday. We ordinarily think of it as chatzi nezek, chatzi nezek, chatzi nezek for the first three gorings, and then there's a new category called nezek shalom. He's saying as follows, the chatzi nezek, chatzi nezek, chatzi nezek, then you get 100%, which is comprised of 50% chatzi nezek and 50% muad, right? And he's saying every single case of muad is actually comprised of these two components. A very practical nafkamina that comes up with that is the following. Let's assume you had a shor that was worth a shor that was worth $800 that got gored by a shor that was worth $200, and that shor is a shor muad. So how much do you owe? You owe $800 because of shor muad, right? But if you understand that half of the payment is for the tam and half of the payment is for the muad, so the half that's for the muad pays the $400. The half that's for the tam, the $400 for the tam, can only pay me gufa. And this animal's only worth $200. So you would pay $600 in that case. So this is an absolute thing. Anytime there's a muad payment, it's comprised of these two components. Okay, so that's Rav Adar Bar Abba's opinion in Rav Yehuda. And so we're saying that Rava says, I'm going to use that one too. So A, we're dealing with the fact that it's Rav Yehuda, and therefore he's putter from muad. Now he's going to say, and when is he putter from muad? When it says he's putter from muad, it means he's putter from that top 50%, the muad 50%. But he is putter from, I'm sorry, so he's putter from the top 50% because he's putter from muad, because Rav Yehuda holds he's putter from muad, but he's still chayav in tamuz. And that's how he ends up paying 50, that's how he ends up paying chatzi nezek. But we need one more view to really understand this, which is how on earth you might tell me that when he's paying chatzi nezek, it's because he's paying the tzad tamuz, he's paying the element of payment that's for the tam. But the problem is, remember, Rabbi Yaakov was saying it's halacha by a cheir shot of a katan. And a cheir shot of a katan, you can't collect by tamuz. So he says it must be that Rabbi Yehuda also holds that you do collect. And if you remember, we had a machlokas sumchas in the Rabbanan about whether you collect. So it's saying he's going, when Rabbi Yaakov says his opinion, he's going according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds like the chachamim, that we do collect. So therefore, how did Rabbi Yaakov come up with the case of chatzi nezek? It was shmira p'chusa, which according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're putter from muad. But when we say you're putter from muad, what are you putter for? The top half of the payment, the 50%, that's the muad payment. So therefore, you're still chayav in the tzad tamuz, and that's how you pay chatzi nezek. But why is he chayav in the tzad tamuz if it's a cher shot of a cotton? Must be, he holds that you do collect even in the first three rounds, and you let the apotropis stand and din, not just to make a muad, but actually to collect. So when you gather these three things together, that Rabbi Yehuda's opinion by muad shmir p'chusa, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion of tzad tamuz b'mekoma medes according to Rav Adar Bar Abba, and the fact that we do collect from a tam, those three together create the case of chatzi nezek. So what is he saying? Rav is saying that Rav Yaakov, when he says his din, holds like Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara asked, Abaya asked on Rava, said, how could you say that it's that Rav Yaakov holds like Rav Yehuda? You see a brisa that says the shor v'cher shot v'katan that gores Rav Yehuda is machayev, and Rav Yaakov amr chatzi nezek. So you see they argue. So one teretz was that they don't argue. And if you look at the language, it's pretty clear they don't argue. Rather, Rav Yaakov was simply explaining that when Rav Yehuda said machayev, he meant chatzi nezek based on these three things coming together. So that was one teretz. But okay, so we see that according to Rava, they don't argue, but Abaya sees them as arguing. So the question we asked was, okay, Abaya, if you see them as arguing, Mr. Abaya, that's real good. Why don't you tell me the case where Rav Yaakov is saying chatzi nezek? Because you can't say it's because he holds like Rav Yehuda. So what's the case according to you that you do pay chatzi nezek? So Abaya would tell you that the way you get to chatzi nezek is because Rabbi Yaakov does hold like Rabbi Yehuda in one, but he does not hold like him in another. And what he's going to say it. So he's saying as follows, that the reason Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda argue is the following case, that Reb Yaakov, Reb Yehuda would hold. Okay, Reb Yehuda would hold as follows. That he says, Reb Yehuda holds tzad tamos b'makom ma'omedes, right? So therefore he is chayav. He's chayav for the tam part, right? So in other words, you had the shor of the chayr shot of a katan that attacked, and he holds like him that in a shmira. We have to change the fact here for one moment. So it's as follows, that we're no longer establishing it in a case of shmira p'chusa. We're not establishing it in a case where he watched it reasonably. We're saying he didn't watch it at all. Okay, if he didn't watch it at all, so how do you arrive at the idea that he's chayav chatzi nezek? Because this opinion goes like Rabbi Yehuda, who says that when you have a mu'ad, it's a mu'ad, and he didn't watch it at all, that when you have a mu'ad, and he watched it, and he didn't watch it, he's chayav 100%. But he's chayav 100%, every 100% has a tzad tamos and a tzad mu'ad. So therefore, it's 50% tam and 50% mu'ad. Now, in this case, he should be chayav 100%. Both because he didn't watch it at all. But why is he not chayav of the bottom 50%? Because we're talking about a case of chayr shot v'katan. And chayr shot v'katan is, he holds that you do not put up an apotropos to collect, and that's how you get to the 50%. So the first, Rava's view had them holding that you do put up an apotropos. Abaya's view has them holding you don't put up an apotropos. In the Rava's view, it's talking about a case where you watch a shmir p'chusa, and in Abaya's case, it's talking about where you didn't watch it at all, so theoretically he's chayav 100%, but he can't collect the bottom half, so that's how Rav Yaakov came up with chatzi nezek. Okay, so now, Rav Acha bar Abaya said to Ravina, I have a kasha on this. Because according to Abaya, who says that we do not hold that you set up an apotropis, right? So when Reb Yaakov said chatzi nezek, it could not be talking about a tam, because a tam cannot pay chatzi nezek because we don't set up an apotropis. So it had to be talking about a mu'ad, right? Okay, so that's fine. But the Gemara operates under the assumption that if you can establish the case as one of a tam, then you would rather establish it as a tam. And the Gemara's kasha, therefore, is, why not say, here's a kasha on Rava, because according to Rava, you could have established the Braisa as talking about a case of Tom. So that's what we're going to pick up in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Amr, with three lines on the bottom on Lamentav Sama Beis, Amr Le Ravacha Bar Abaya Le Ravina, Ravacha Bar Abaya said to Ravina, Bishlam Ala Abaya, it works out well according to Abaya, the Amr Pligi, who says they do argue about whether you put up an apotropis, and therefore Shapir, it works out well that we don't talk about the case being a case of tam, because it's a case of muad, and it cannot be tam, because we are not mamin and apotropis. Elo Rava, damar lo pligi, but according to Rava that says that we are mamin and apotropis, adamukile b'muad, nukum apotam, why not do it as a tam? How could you do it with a tam? E l'Reb Yehuda, if you want to, you could find it in two cases. If you hold like Reb Yehuda, it could be the Avad Leishmir Pchusa, V'loy Avad Leishmir Mu'ula. So we're talking about a Tom. Now remember, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that, what's his opinion by Shmira Pchusa, if you do a reasonable watching? By Mu'ad, it's Pater. By Tom, it's Chayav. So you're going to say that he did Shmira Pchusa, and therefore he's Chayav by Tom, because Rabbi Yehuda holds he's Chayav by Tom. And what do you pay when you're Chayav by Tom? Chatzi Nezek. Either Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, alternatively, you could say that it's going like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, the lo avid le shmira klal. He did no shmira, and if he did no shmira, the sanya Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov amar echad tam yachad muad sheshamran shmira pchusa peturin. You see their pater v'ha'kamashul aner Yaakov v'ma'midin lehem apetrapas l'tam ligvos migufo. I'm sorry. That's already further. So you could say it's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and he did no shmira. And therefore, it's talking about a tam that he did no shmira. So if it's a tam did no shmira, what do you owe? Chatzi nezek. So I found two cases where it could be chatzi nezek. Shmira p'chusa, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is mechayev by tam chatzi nezek. Or a regular case where he did no shmira, and then according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, even according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, he's chayev chatzi nezek. Right, from their money, the apotropis, whoever pays, whether it's the apotropis or the chayr shot of a cotton. So you see, what they're saying is, I could give you two circumstances under which the case could be a tam, and then therefore, what would Rabbi Yaakov coming to be telling us? He's coming to tell you when Rabbi Yaakov says that you pay chatzi nezek. What is he coming to tell you? He's coming to teach you that you can collect from the apotropis in a case of the first three times, right? So therefore, that in other words, what was our kasha originally was how in other words, what case could Rabbi Yaakov be talking about? So he's saying, I'll give you a case where he's talking about a tam, where he didn't watch it at all according to Rabbi Lezer and Yaakov, or he watched it even Shmir Pchus according to Rabbi Yehuda. In that case, he's chayav chatzi nezek. Now, you might think it should not get paid because maybe we don't collect. So therefore we say you should pay chatzi nezek. And that's what Yaakov is coming to say.
Now,
what?
Didn't we say by
Kherishat B'Kati? No, that Rabbi Yaakov is coming to say you do collect. So in other words, he's coming... Because you set up the apotropis, and that was the machlokas sumchus and the rabbanon. So we're saying he holds like the rabbanon, and he comes to do it. Now, you might ask me, and should ask me, as follows. When we started this whole thing, why didn't we understand Rabbi Yaakov's brisa? Because we said, it can't be talking about a muad where you watched it perfectly because then he's not chayav anything. It can't be talking about a muad where you didn't watch it at all because then he should be chayav everything. But what did we say? But you cannot tell me it's talking about a tam, because if it's tam, it's pshita. All you would need it to say is mechayev, that he's mechayev, right? So therefore, the fact that he said chatzi nezek, it cannot be coming just to tell me that you collect from the apotropis, because then it would have said mechayev. So for the fact that it said chatzi nezek, it has to be coming to tell me something more. But now we're asking Akasha and Rava and saying, you could have said that it was a case of a tam, and what would be the case where it's chatzi nezek and he's chayev, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is coming to tell you, you do collect from an apotropis. Our whole Gemara was premised on the fact that that's an insufficient explanation, because then it should have just said mechayev, right? So how come in the Havamina you said that this is an impossible explanation because it would have said Mechayev and not Chatzi Nezek, and all of a sudden now you're telling me Akasha and Rava because it could have said Chatzi Nezek? So the Gemara, so Tosis and Rashi at some level explain as follows, that when we first asked this question, we didn't know this opinion of Rava that you could have the three things come together, and you end up with a scenario where it's a Muad paying Chatzi Nezek. So therefore... The three opinions, the fact that it's a Rabbi Yehuda's opinion by Nezek with Shmir Pchusa, the Tzad Tamas B'Mekom Omedes, and the fact that you do collect from an apotropis. So in other words, what we're saying now is as follows. It no longer works to say just Mechayev if what he's trying to tell us, what was the Gemara saying? The Gemara says if you're trying to tell us that you can collect from an apotropis, just say Mechayev, don't say Chatzi Nezek. The Gemara is now saying, no. That you could say it's talking about a tam now because mechayev doesn't work. Because if Rabbi Yaakov said mechayev in the case of cherishot v'katan, we might think, what is he coming to say? He's not talking about a tam. Because before we assumed, if we would just say mechayev, we would know he's talking about a tam because mu'ah doesn't make sense. He's either chayev nothing or everything, so it has to be talking about a tam. And it must be saying that you collect from an apotropis, so just say mechayev. So now he's saying, had you just said mechayev, once we know what we now know, it would be insufficient, because maybe when Rabbi Yaakov says Mechayev by Cheir Shat V'Katan, he's coming to say, you might think it's talking about a case of Muad. And it is a case of Muad with the three opinions of Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore he only pays Chatzi Nezek, and to that Rabbi Yaakov would be coming to say, Mechayev, no, you don't pay Chatzi Nezek, you have to pay Nezek Shalim. So I can now find a case where if it only said Mechayev, I would not know that he's talking about a chatzi nezek and a tam. I might think he's talking about le'afuke, the opinion that a muad could pay nezek, chatzi nezek, and instead he's saying mechayev, he pays nezek shalim. So at this point, it's insufficient to just say mechayev, and therefore I could establish the case as one where he is saying, I could establish the case as one where we're talking about a tam, and it's chatzi nezek, and Rabbi Yaakov comes to say you pay chatzi nezek because mechayev was insufficient if he's trying to prove that you collect from an apotropis and would have to have said chatzi nezek. So now we have a good kasha on Rava, because we're saying, once you, Rava, say that there's such a possibility that it's chatzi nezek by muad, and therefore Mechayev would not tell us it's a tam and chatzi nezek and you collect from the apotropis, so therefore you could, but in other words, if you, Rava, hold of that, you could have established a case as being a case of muad, And therefore, being a case of Tam, and Tam would be telling you that Rabbi Yaakov is coming to say that you collect from an apotropos, he's not here to talk about a Muad case. So we found a scenario where you could say it's a Tam and not a Muad. So Amr Lei, Hachi Kamer, Chadad Ispei Tarti Taima. So Rava is going to answer you, don't ask me that I should have been Mukimid as a Tam, because if I would have been Mukimid as a Tam, what would you have learned? You would have learned that you collect from an apotropos, because that's the only way you could pay Chatzi Nezek. And that was his point. Don't tell me that I should have said that, because by telling it, and that I should have explained the Brisa as dealing with a Shar Tam, because I'm much better off, because I explained it to you in a case of Muad. Not only did you learn the Chiddush that I taught you about these three opinions coming together to create Chatzi Nezek by Muad, I've also taught you that by an apotropos you do collect. Why? Because what was the third element of Rava's mix is that you hold Shmira Pchusa, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is Pater by Muad. And therefore, in this case, by Muad, where he was a Shmira Pchusa, you're Pater from the top half, the Muad half, and you're Chayev in the Tam half. If you're Chayev in the Tam half, that's the second element. But how are you Chayev Chatzi Nezek if we're talking about a Cher Shot of a Katan? How are you Chayev in the Tam half? Only if you put up an apotropos and collect from an apotropos, even on the Tam half. So he says, I've not only taught you my chiddush of these three things coming together, I've also taught you that you can collect from an apotropos. So he says, don't bother me that I should have been mukim as a Tam. When I'm mukim as a Muad, I accomplish both points. I teach you about Muad, and I also teach you about Tam. So that's the answer to Abaye's question. Now, very quickly, the Gemara, if you remember, we said, Rava said his opinion with these three opinions coming together and saying that how did Rabbi Yaakov say Chatzi Nezek? It's because he held like Rabbi Yehuda. Abaye came back and said, how could you say that Rabbi Yaakov's explanation is because he holds like Rabbi Yehuda? At the end of the day, Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda argue in the Brisa. So one teretz was, no, Rabbi Yaakov is just explaining Rabbi Yehuda. When Rabbi Yehuda says Mechayev, he means Chatzi Nezek. Ravina is going to give us a second teretz, which would enable us to defend Rava's teretz and say that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda aren't arguing about whether you put up an apotropos, because what we're going to say, Ravina is going to say, yes, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov argue by a shar of a cheir shot of a katan, but they're not arguing in the point about whether you can put up an apotropos and collect from him. They're arguing about something else. And that's why the fact that they argue about something else has no bearing on Rava's explanation that Rabbi Yaakov's Chatzi Nezek came from his holding like Rabbi Yehuda. So what do they argue about if not the issue of being Ma'amin and apotropos? Ravina Amar, Rishus Meshana Ikebenayu. They're arguing about whether this idea that when it transfers ownership, do you reset the clock on being a Shar Muad or not? Kigon, Shar Tam or Shar Muad. Kigon, they have a muad. You have a muad. V'nispakach. Acherish. The acherish is cured. V'nishtapa. Ashota. The shota is healed from his illness. V'higdal cotton. The cotton grows up. Rabbi Yehuda savar harehu b'ches kaso. So Rabbi Yehuda, who said mechayev by a shor acherish of a cotton, is talking about once the owner recovers, he's still chayev because he does not hold of mashana reshus. Rabbi Yaakov savar Rishus Mishana. Rabbi Yaakov holds Rishus does switch. And therefore, it goes back to being a Shar Tam. If it goes back to being a Shar Tam, so that's why you pay Chatzi Nezek. So we're learning. The first price of Rabbi Yaakov said a Shar of a Cher Shot of a Cotton pays Chatzi Nezek. Rav is going to tell you that's because of my three things I put together and come up with where it's talking about a case of Muad where Shmir Pechusa. Now, you asked me, there's a brisa where Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov disagree about a shor of a cheir shot of a katan. So how could you say Rabbi Yaakov holds like Rabbi Yehuda? He's going to say, no, that machlokas is about a totally different issue. It's about the issue of Mashana Rishus. Does it revert back to being a shor tam and the clock starts again? And the